Welcome to the fifth edition of Vox Populi, the show by atheists for atheists. Twice a month, our team answers questions on various issues relevant to the atheist life. In this episode, we discuss dealing with believers in society. Sure, it would be nice if we lived in a society where everyone thought rationally and acted with benevolence, but as long as religion is around, we have to deal with believers. Our first question is, do you see religious believers as deluded, liars, conformists? Are they morally culpable for their beliefs?
Are religious believers deluded, liars, or conformists? I think the vast majority of the time, religious believers are either deluded or conformist. They're usually not lying, at least not consciously. Although sometimes religious believers can be self-deluded in that they willingly prevent themselves from accepting rational arguments against their beliefs. For the most part, though, religious people are conformists or they just don't know any better. They've been brought up in a certain worldview. These people have been told things since they were born and they accept them as true. The same thing happened with me. When I was raised as a child, as a Christian, I readily accepted the Jesus myth and the God myth. I never questioned it, at least early on. Only when I was an older person did I start to question these things, and even then, it was only because of new information that I was being exposed to. So most of the time, no, religious people are not liars, but they are deluded, and they are conformists, definitely. As far as whether or not they're morally culpable for their beliefs, I would say most of the time, no. They're not morally culpable for something that they can't necessarily help. But I do believe that if they aren't able to see rational arguments as defeating their irrational beliefs in religion, then they may not be morally culpable, but they might be below average intelligence, if nothing else.
I think most of the quote-unquote believers I know just go along with the crowd to conform, definitely. Because life is a lot simpler when you conform, don't you think? I mean, people tell you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and they don't even need to give you a reason, so it's pretty simple. Plus, you've got someone to blame whenever shit hits the fan. But there's definitely a few religious liars, viz. Kent Hovind, for example, and even some that are just plain deluded, see Kent Hovind again. Seriously, though, I don't think guys like Jerry Falwell or Hovind can possibly believe what they say. I mean, their claims are just so absolutely ludicrous that they would need to be insane, insanely deluded, that is, to mean what they say. But they can't possibly be insane because they're too cunning. Cunning enough to make loads of cash off of their bullshit. Are they morally culpable for their beliefs? Well, I don't think average Joe American is, no. Most people just don't care enough to look into it and go along with whatever works for the people around them. So, you know, they won't be an outsider. It's really the guys like Hovind and Fowler who are to blame.
I think it's an overgeneralization, but yes, religious believers fall into the categories of either the deluded, liars, or conformists, or a combination of the three. Religion fills many psychological needs of individuals, and every individual has different needs and desires. For some, religion is a justification to lie, hate, cheat, or otherwise justify their beliefs and desires. Religion also tends to distort and pervert those beliefs and desires based on the ridiculous dogma and practices necessary to belong to any of them. Most suspend their belief or their disbelief and never critically examine their questions left unsatisfactorily explained by their religion simply because there is more comfort and less stress in group acceptance. It all boils down to the same thing. The need for religion, the compulsion of tradition, and the voluntary perpetual delusion are all signs of a neurotic disorder. They are all psychological neuroses. I also believe there are genetic and sociobiological connections to religion. Religion is inherited much in the same way preferences, opinions, tendencies, and beliefs and prejudices are adopted, perpetuated, and honed from environmental, social, and family influence. Greed, ignorance, and stupidity still reign supreme, even in a technologically advanced, self-aware, and self-conscious human species. We have not yet evolved past our dependence on superstition, and there still seems to be little impetus for change. As long as we accept outdated and dysfunctional dogmas and the abhorrent moralities attached to them, religion will continue to hold humanity back. The changes necessary for us to overcome our dependence on religion happen slowly over numerous generations. That is why religion seems permanent. A cursory glance at the history of religion in general gives one the understanding that our dogmas slowly change and give way to the demands of the majority. There are certainly relapses, but progress is still being made. The day all individuals understand the importance of taking responsibility and examining their personal beliefs and convictions with a critical mind and courage will be the day religion will no longer be necessary or effective.
Religious believers come in all shapes and sizes. They're certainly deluded, and if by liar you mean that they spout lies every time they talk about their beliefs as being true, then yeah, they're liars, all right. They are also conformist in the sense that they don't think and choose to go with the flow. They could have very good reasons, but we know for certain that truth is not one of them, which makes them even bigger liars if you think about it. But overall, I think it's difficult to say what really causes grown-ups to hold on to their religious beliefs. I think a lot of it is ignorance, and I don't know that it's willful. I think a lot of it is being satisfied with life in such an ignorant state. You know, you grow up with church friends, your family is all there with you, you marry a church girlfriend or boyfriend, have kids and send them to church, and you know, it's just how most people live, at least in the U.S. I think it sucks tremendously, but it's just how they live. Of course, it's how they choose to live, so they're not off the proverbial hook on that count, on the count of being a passive receptacle of cultural beliefs and practices. So, yes, cultural believers are certainly morally culpable for their beliefs, just like anyone else is morally culpable for theirs.
If parents all over the world stopped indoctrinating religion to their children, what do you think would happen?
Oh, well, this is quite a broad question, and quite a ridiculous question at that. Never in a million years would this happen. First off, it's just not going to happen. There will always be people who have misconceptions about the way things work, and they'll tell them to their children, and their children will go on and believe them too. It's just, that's the way parenting works. Unless something drastic happens to the way parenting works, that's the way it's going to happen. I mean, this is like asking parents to give up their kids. I mean, I don't think all parents are fit to raise kids, but asking parents to give them up is just insane in this day and age. And even if this did happen, even if it did happen for one generation, the next generation, the children would pick up new indoctrinations and pass them on to their children. So the system stops after one generation. This is just ridiculous. The only way I would ever even entertain this idea, that this might happen, that this might be someday remotely close to happening, is if humans as an intelligent species evolve a capacity to reason far beyond what we have today. And let me tell you, that day is not anywhere in the near future.
We can all dream of a better world, can't we? I think within a generation you would have a much reduced amount of religious adherence globally, obviously. If people aren't indoctrinated at an early age, I think they're much less likely to become religious, although it's still not impossible. But I think that globally religions would be recognized more as crazy fringe groups than the mainstream correct way of thinking that is the popular opinion today. If people stopped indoctrinating religion to their children, I also think that there would be, within a generation, a lot of statistical changes in terms of the way society behaves. I think there would be less divorce, less murder, less lying and stealing. There would be less of a reason for people to excuse their sins or their crimes against their fellow man by saying that God forgives them. I think people would be much more inclined to look at the world scientifically, rationally, and things of that sort. I think the level of human knowledge of the universe and the reality that we live in would accelerate dramatically, to say the least.
Religion survives on the perpetual indoctrination of the youth by their parents and community leaders. Without the renewable resource of children, religions would become obsolete very quickly. Sadly, much in the same way a product becomes obsolete without advertising or a target consumer. I've always believed religion gains acceptance because it is given validity as a humane and practical institution, much in the same way math, science, and languages are automatically accepted as valid institutions. The obvious difference is that valid pursuits, like math and science, are verifiable by critical examination and are held to the strictest standards, and need not rely on renewable belief by successive generations. Religion is still the only subject that not only doesn't require critical standards, but shuns them and perpetuates the persona of being above any standards except their own God's rules. Much like old movies, music, fairy tales, and the like, religion would be forgotten, if not perpetuated, as something worth remembering and experiencing by successive generations. The irony is that the parents currently pushing their religious beliefs on their children are only doing so because their parents did the same to them. This chain goes so far back that it almost adds an air of legitimacy and permanence.
Well, children would grow up to appreciate life and stop avoiding it. They would learn that knowledge equals power and freedom, not weakness and constraint. They would learn to question what they're told in school and to try to understand a subject from more than one point of view. Essentially, they would learn to think for themselves. Religious indoctrination is a form of brainwashing, and brainwashing is brain dirtying or brain clogging, because it does anything but wash or refresh your brain. No parent can care very much about his or her child's individuality when night after night, day after day, ideas are force-fed into that child's head. What are parents thinking? Are they thinking that their religious beliefs will prevent their kids from murdering, raping, or stealing? Are they thinking that without their religious beliefs, kids will have no sense of morality? I guess so, but it's pretty pathetic on the parents' part. If I could tell religious parents what I think about their parental performance, I would say something along the lines of, give your kid a chance to be human, to think autonomously, to use the brain that you think your God gave him or her. To be a parent means to set an example for how to live. If you wanted a robot or a pet, you could have bought one. Robots can't live. Pets can't think. Kids can do both. So get a clue.
Religious indoctrination of the young is essential for perpetuation of the religious meme, just as the infection of a new host is essential for the propagation of a virus. Parents who are concerned about this indoctrination can take a cue from biomedical research. Viral vaccines are made by dissecting the virus conceptually, isolating the most infective component, and then introducing that component in a controlled manner. By exposing their children to a wide range of religious memes in this attenuated way, parents can help to ensure that their children will be no more likely to catch Christianity or Islam than the measles or the mumps. But should this become popular, what would be the eventual outcome? Again, we can look to biology for suggestions. Through modern medicine, widespread vaccine use has virtually eliminated such diseases as smallpox, measles, and the mumps, diseases which used to flourish unchecked through the human population. I would hypothesize that the common religions of today would also face a similar threat, and in a few generations we'd see mainstream religions only as a scarce minority. But in biology, just when we thought we'd seen the end of the era of infectious disease, up springs HIV, SARS, and avian influenza. Now, instead of crowing about the triumph of modern medicine, we're scrambling to find a way to protect ourselves against these new diseases or risk a global pandemic. I think the same risk exists for the development of new and mimetically potent religions and the eventuality of religious immunization. Just as certain strains of virus can mutate into new forms year after year, certain types of religion are mimetically pliable and can spawn dozens of different progeny virtually overnight. So even the best efforts of parents to immunize their children against the ravages of religion today may be ineffective when a new religious meme springs into existence 20 years from now. And we also need to keep in mind that just as some viruses like smallpox can be passed from parent to child, others like HIV are primarily transferred between adults. In the same way, there are some religions that would naturally lose little from parental religious immunization since they target individuals in adulthood, One of these is, in my opinion, Reformed Christianity, whose doctrine of total depravity appeals primarily to adults who have a history of significant immoral behavior. Of course, I don't think that immunizing your children against religion is pointless, since it won't get rid of religion altogether. Far from it. Just because other viruses may exist, parents still immunize their children for measles. I think it's every parent's obligation to educate their children for their own protection, whether or not that protection is absolutely sufficient. I, for one, will do my part to pass on as much of my knowledge and experience as possible to my children, in the hopes that they have the freedom to go through life as free of religion as possible.
What is your position on marriage as an institution? Does it have anything to do with a strict religious concept of marriage? Why or why not? What is your conception of love relationships?
Marriage. What a retarded concept. Out of the 6 or so billion people on Earth, 2 lonely people are supposed to stay together for their entire lives until death do they part. Well, what happens if they get bored of each other? Even mutually? What happens if one has a religious revelation and can't stand that the other won't follow suit? Not only is the concept silly, but it's even more ridiculous that the government has the balls to endorse this religious practice with tax cuts and so on. Of course, government won't stand for the Mormon practice of polygamy, and it won't stand for gay marriage, but they'll happily endorse this religious practice with monetary reward, so you can't get it if you haven't found your partner and signed a slip of paper with their name on it. Now, not to sound like a hypocrite or anything, but I suppose there are some good reasons for getting married. For one thing, if you choose to stay in a country that supports it, it's an obvious plus with lower taxation and whatnot. Another plus might be for something like banking, where spouses are allowed to access an account if the owner's unavailable. Of course, that could also have its drawbacks, as you can imagine. I guess it's worthwhile to note that if I ever do end up married, she'll be signing a prenup, and you can count on that.
Marriage is only important if those who enter into marriage place importance on it. For myself and my wife, our marriage means that we have agreed to live our lives together. Nothing more and nothing less. The legal aspect of our marriage is out of deference to the state, which requires a legal contract to grant certain benefits, which we both want to take advantage of. Although we were married in a religious ceremony, there's no religious component to our marriage. Does this cheapen it? I don't think so. Our marriage and our relationship is a rational agreement between two people who love each other and want to share in each other's lives. Now, I would think that the average Christian marriage, in which both spouses believe that God has led them to be together, seems more cheap by comparison. I mean, if they truly believe it's the case that God has arranged their marriage, then doesn't it just amount to an arranged marriage? I tend to be suspect of those relationships because it would likely be the case that for one or both individuals, emotions are forced out of deference to what they believe that God wants from them. And I've seen personally marriages of fast and devoted Christians crumble from the inside out for this very reason. Arranged marriages in a society where divorce is relatively easy and stigma-free just aren't going to last very long. And the Barna Research Group has conducted research which supports this. Marriages among Christians in America are tentative at best, enjoying the highest divorce rates of any religious background. Now, incidentally, atheists have the lowest, so it would seem that having a religious component in your marriage is actually a bad thing. At least, it's bad if you want your marriage to last, which I'm sure most religious people do. You know, that might not be a bad slogan for atheist evangelism. Save your marriage, become an atheist, or something like that. But seriously, I think that deep down, Christians really do value loving relationships as much as atheists, aside, of course, from the sexual orientation of that love. Now, I'd like to say that there's a huge aspect of Christianity that instills an aversion to homosexual marriage, but I really don't think that's the case. Especially since we know that Christians look the other way religiously when it comes to the true opposite of heterosexual marriage, heterosexual divorce. No, I'm afraid most Christians are turned off by homosexual marriage for the same reason as most non-Christians. We're straight. Homosexual relationships imply a kind of physical intimacy that most of us aren't even able to conceptualize. But that's okay. It's that same aversion that makes us straight, just like an aversion to heterosexual intimacy is what makes homosexuals gay. But it'd be a naturalistic fallacy to conclude any kind of moral judgment from that aversion, which, unfortunately, the majority of Americans do. But I don't think that marriage as an institution is in any danger. I'm proud to be married, and I recommend it to any couple who want to share their love and their lives with each other.
My position on marriage as an institution unfortunately for some, is not a very favorable one. My own personal experiences with marriage weren't very good. My parents were constantly getting divorced and remarried to different people, and I was moved around between families as a result. But I think that making a lifelong commitment to someone is a very valid concept and is respectable. But marriage as an institution with a government deciding what is and is not legal marriage, I think that's all baloney. I think the only people that can decide whether or not a marriage or a union between two people is real is those two people themselves. No one else can tell them if it's sanctioned or not. I think it's only sanctioned by the commitment they make to each other, not by what anyone else says. Take, for example, gay people that have much more of a real marriage, even though they're not legally recognized as such, than, say, for example, Britney Spears, who has a legally recognized marriage for, what, you know, 72 hours, and then she calls it off and things like that. I think that marriage is not determined, basically, by what anyone else says. A marriage is determined by the way you and another person commit yourselves to each other.
First and foremost, marriage is a man-made institution, with or without religious connotations. I've always seen the roots of marriage as practices developed over time by different tribes and societies. Essentially, marriage is successful because it helps establish a healthy society and lends stability, hopefully, by maintaining a positive environment to raise children. There's also a hint of possession left in marriage as well. Historically, many societies have seen marriage as a public celebration of acquiring property, that is, ownership of a woman. The taking of the male surname by the woman is an indication of that. The idea of the male's offspring having his name gives him cause to support and protect his children. Marriage no longer has the same validity or importance it once had. Even religion or federal sanctioning cannot change this. It is no longer practical in a world that understands marriage as a social contract, not the binding word of a god. There is no justification for a woman to remain married to an abuser or a man to stay married to an unfaithful woman. In short, reality dictates the permanency of a couple's relationship, not a piece of paper ordained by God or government. Marriage is just another institution adopted and perverted by religion. Personally, I think the idea of monogamy and religion evolved side by side out of necessity. Religion simply laid claim to marriage just as it has done with everything else except evil.
For those of you who have Christian friends, where do you draw the line at being nice? For those of you who don't have Christian friends, where would you draw the line?
Outside family, I don't really have any Christian friends at this point. I do have one or two, but we're not very close, and that's probably more of a conscious decision on my part than the, you know, ever-widening gulf of interpersonal or intrapersonal communication that naturally comes with age in our post-industrial societies. It really doesn't bother me that I don't have any real Christian friends. In fact, what would bother me is if I had to spend time with them, sit back and take their crap about, you know, their particular one out of a thousand religion, which, you know, would happen often. I mean, the other thing to do is argue with them, but that's not very conducive to friendship by definition. So it seems to me that there's really, you know, isn't a way to stay friends with Christians, at least Christians who care anything about their religious beliefs, provided, of course, that they don't, or that they do know that I'm an atheist. But you ask where I would draw the line if I actually had real Christian friends, and I guess I would have to draw the line with them trying to convert me. I would probably tolerate their closed-minded opinions about life for a while, but when they aim that crap in my direction, I'd have to set them straight. As it is, I prefer not to go to all the trouble.
And finally, question number 4. For those of you who have Christian friends, where do you draw the line at being nice? I have some Christian friends, but I've never had to draw a line at being nice. I don't shy away from an argument, and I will attempt to justify my beliefs, but I always try to remember everyone else is entitled to the same. I won't push an argument that is pointless or a waste of time. It also becomes obvious when a Christian is unreachable and unpreachable after only a short conversation. Now, if a Christian were to openly attack and criticize my beliefs, I would at least defend myself, if not go on the offensive. I've just always seen that as a waste of time and energy. Personal attacks on my reputation or my family, or attempts to hinder my livelihood, would be necessary before I felt justified in tearing someone apart physically, mentally, financially, or legally. But I would be capable of that. I've had Jehovah's Witnesses come to my door, and I've been to events and places with heavy religious proselytizing. I've ignored much of it and offered my opinions when appropriate. No matter what, though, I've refused to give in to pressure to conform, out of respect, what a joke that is, to religious practices. I will not pray at a meal or bow my head at any event. Perhaps the only exception would be standing for the Pledge of Allegiance at a function. I've done that in the past out of respect for my country and the people who have lived to make it better. Even now, though, I don't do that out of embarrassment for the numerous atrocities my country has committed during my lifetime. It is getting harder to not draw a line now that Christian politics have taken center stage. What I used to tolerate indirectly is now affecting my friends and family and myself directly. It's like watching a close friend or relative pissing their life away in front of your eyes, except on a national scale. That is partially the reason for my involvement in programs such as this.
Where do you draw the line at being nice with your Christian friends? Well, I don't really have a problem with being nice. I mean, yelling at a friend or calling them an idiot probably won't get you anywhere. But that being said, I don't have any really good friends that are the go-to-church-every-Sunday type of Christian anyway. I've never really had enough in common with that type of person, and I have a few acquaintances of that type, to become friends with them. I suppose if a friend of mine did turn fundy, I'd try and talk them out of it, or gradually cut them off, if I had to, but I don't think I would become friends in the first place with anyone at risk of that happening. Even if a friend of mine did go fundy, though, I still wouldn't really see a point in getting angry or calling them names or stupid or anything like that. I mean, I find it's just much easier generally and nicer to be on friendly terms with someone, even if you don't consider them a friend. I guess you could say my motto, at least as far as this is concerned, is on par with Google's, which is, of course, don't be evil. It's generally better to have friends than enemies, and as always, better safe than sorry.
Where do I draw the line at being nice to my Christian friends? I draw the line with my Christian friends the same place I draw the line with my atheist, Islamic, Buddhist, agnostic, and pagan friends. I treat all my friends the same in terms of drawing the line at being nice and respectful to them. I only return the niceties and respect that they give to me as a person. Now, keep in mind, I make a large distinction between respecting a person and respecting the beliefs that they have. I can respect my Christian friends and tell them frankly what I think of their beliefs and all religious beliefs, because there is that distinction there. I can tell them, I respect you. I understand how you came to this conclusion. Let me tell you why I think it's wrong, and let me tell you why I don't respect the worldview that you have, but it has no bearing on you and me individually and personally. People, unfortunately, too often associate others with the views they may have, and they treat them horribly as if that person was Christianity or was atheism or was abortion or whatever. I think the distinction is important to make between a worldview and the person that subscribes to it. Because if you don't have that distinction, you're going to have a lot of issues with getting along with people, helping them see your point of view, and convincing them of the truth.
Our team was Robert Dawson, Jake Doling, Edward Grieve, Aaron Kinney, and Zachary Moore. An archive of this feature is available on hellboundalley.com/voxpopuli. Email us at ally@hellboundalley.com if you have comments or suggestions for new questions. Thank you everyone for their great work, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for more insightful answers, this time on the topic of epistemology. This was Vox Populi, the voices of atheism.